When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let me go. I can get my cooler. Hey, I got 10 to 12 beers in there. They're yours.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Underrated Podcast. We're a podcast that discusses films that are underrated, underappreciated, the ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. As always, I am one of your hosts, Ariel Ortiz, and today I am joined by Derek McDuff and Alan Torres, as always. And today we're going to be talking about a choice of my own, and it's a movie that I've been kind of been wanting to watch for a while. I've heard really good things about it, but it's always one that's not really discussed much and is a little bit more underground indie, in my opinion. Or consider that, at least. And we are going to be talking about Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which is about two lovable hillbillies that come across a case of assumptions where more so the ass is made out of the you instead of the me. So we could just start digging in and discussing this really funny movie.
Yeah, this is a movie that I had actually kind of had in the back of my mind as thinking about covering for a while now, and the main reason is because this is one of my brother's, like, one of his favorite movies of all time. He's always been kind of like, you should cover this in your show at some point, because he was introduced to it by a friend who basically is Dale from this movie. Like, he's a good old boy, but he's, like, the nicest guy you will ever meet, and just by looking at him, you might be like, oh, what's this guy's deal? But he's an absolute sweetheart. And so I watched this movie with him and my brother and a bunch of my brother's friends a couple years back, and I was just really won over by it. I think it's very fun and heartwarming. It does a really good job of taking all of these tropes and conventions that you would see in all these Cabin in the Woods, Friday the 13th, even like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, oh, there's you know, watch out for them and them hill people. And it just kind of flips all of that on its head and makes it really a commentary on just kind of judging people and the lack of communications and the problems that causes in the world. So I think it does manage to convey that really important message in a very fun and stupid and goofy way that I had an absolute ball with. Like, this movie's so ridiculous. Like, when the guy jumps head first into the wood chipper, I was like dying and laughing. There's so many moments. Like, it's just like, these kids are out here killing them. By the way, Alan Tudyk is always a win for me. I'm always in the pocket for him. So, like,
hell,
like,
yeah, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm, as soon as I saw him pop up, I was like, okay, cool. I'm on board. Even though he's the first name character, he's more of the supporting role, but he's so good in this. And I do like that he is a little more, even though I just said he was like the more supporting character, he is more of a central role than you would usually see him in. He's usually just doing like voice work or showing up as like Wendy's mom in the new Peter Pan, or Wendy's dad in the new Peter Pan movie or whatever. So it's really cool to see him flex those muscles. But one thing that really bugs me in a lot of movies, especially horror films, is just the kind of like, oh my gosh, if these people would just talk to each other or just do the smart thing, then everything would be solved. And this movie takes that up to the like 11th degree, like the turning it up to 11, but it is actually a commentary on how we need to be more communicative. I can't even communicate this word in our day-to-day life. And so I think that was a really smart, fun meta way to handle this just kind of brisk, fun movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually saw this a long time ago. I remember I had a friend who, oh gosh, when did this movie come out? It was
2010.
Okay, yeah, for sure I saw it a long time ago, because This was like early Netflix. Like this is when Netflix was finally streaming and people were kind of getting into it in the early 2010s. And I had a buddy who was like, oh my God, you're a horror guy. You're going to love this movie. And he kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. You know, we would go out drinking all the time. And he's like, bro, you have to watch this. And I was like, all right, fine. So I finally sat down and watched it and I fucking loved it. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. I had seen Alan Tudyk in Firefly. And
R.I.P. Wash.
And he's also Steve the Pirate.
Mm-hmm. And I saw the guy who plays Dale, Tyler Labine. He does Reaper. He's great in this, but in Reaper, he's fucking outstanding. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, cool. At least I know these two guys are really great actors and just stole the show. I mean, it's their show, so they just completely killed it. And yeah, Derek, just like you said, it's a great commentary. I feel like it's in that realm of horror film that satirizes the horror genre, like Scream or Cabin in the Woods. And I absolutely love that. I love when it kind of pokes fun at itself. And what's also great, too, is that it has some great gore. It really goes out of its way. Like, it really pushes it when it wants to, but it's also hilarious as well. Because I feel like one of the biggest things with horror comedy is that sometimes it just doesn't hit. It either hits on the horror or it hits in the comedy, and then it just does a really bad job being both. And just like, you know, Cabin in the Woods and Scream, this movie's hits the nail on the head on both ends. It does a great job. All the actors are awesome. Enjoyable story. And like you said, like the commentary is great. You know, it's those things where it's just like, don't go into the house. And I just love how it's this funny, the kids are killing themselves. Like that line, he's just like, you know, Alan Tudyk's character's calling the cops. And he's just like, oh my God, I don't know what the fuck's going on. These kids are just killing, they're running out of nowhere. They're killing themselves. It's like a cult. And I just absolutely had me fucking dying. I didn't get the opportunity to rewatch it just because life happens. But I remember it very fondly. And it's just such a banger. And honestly, I actually had this in the back of my mind. I was thinking about doing an underrated, but the thing is, I'm always on Reddit. And it gets brought up a lot. So I was kind of like, is it underrated? I don't know. Is it one of those like...
It's under radar.
Horror fans, it's maybe not underrated, but like, I don't think like a lot of general audiences see it, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, when Ariel had brought it up, I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. I think it's kind of under the radar. Yeah. I hang out there way too much. So when I think a movie's underrated and they start talking about it all the time, I go, oh shit, well, I guess it's not. And then someone goes, have you heard of this? And I'm like, yeah, of course. What the fuck? And they're like, yeah, like you said, it's the general audience. They're all not going to hear about it. And again, this was kind of a cult film. Yeah. When it came out, I think a lot of people had seen it and then it just disappeared. So, and then I can't even believe it. It came out 2010. I feel like it was years ago, but damn. Yeah. That's nuts. Total blast. It's a great... I honestly kind of wish it was more of a classic that more people knew about, because it's so damn funny. And, like, it's not particularly scary, but it's gory, but it's just so much fun, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I just had such a wonderful time with this movie. I think it's definitely going to become, like, one that I rewatch very regularly. Just for... It's just such... While it's zany and like crazy, it is very much based in and very grounded in reality, because of this is kind of like how people this kind of situation would, if you make that assumption of a hillbilly, of pulling the scene at the beginning kind of a little reminiscent of Deliverance itself, which is like considered as one of the prime and earliest versions of like that notion of hillbillies being like scary or sketchy, with the kid at the, like, I don't know if he was like pumping water. I think it was pumping water, but that kid right away, I was like, Deliverance right there. That's like a reference, just missing the banjo and the rocking chair for that one. But yeah, like it's such a incredible movie. I know it might, Alan Tudyk is just kind of like a guy that it is very much involves himself in cult. He just finds a cult following in his own way. Like, he's for us and going to cons and stuff like that, he's just a regular to us. So he's just always funny, always entertaining in everything that he gets a sense in. Like, definitely, if you want to check out a lot more of on-camera things, especially now, is Resident Evil. Resident Alien is such an incredible, like, showing of his physicality in both in normal face and then in prosthetics as well. And yeah, he's just Alan Tudyk. Like, he's just his Alan Tudyk, and that's all you can say. Like, everything he's in just is...
Another quick shout-out for him is, if anybody's seen Santa Clarita Died, he actually takes over the role of a severed zombie head from another Firefly alum. He takes over the Nathan Fillion role, so you're like, oh. But, yeah.
And he fucking... God, dude. Oh my God, I'm tracking off a little bit, but fucking Santa Clarita Diet was so... fucking good, and right? I am so sad it got canceled. It was easily one of the best Netflix originals. Me and my girlfriend were obsessed with it, and yeah, when I heard Nathan Fillion left, I was really sad. And they're like, "But Alan Tudyk," and I was like, "Oh, even better!" I was like, "That's fine with me." Oh, sorry, I want to give a little shout out to him too, as the resident DC guy. I love that he's done so many DC performances. He's the Joker. He's Clayface in Harley Quinn. He's played Superman in, I think maybe Flashpoint, a couple of those. And it's so wild how he has three unique performances in those. Like, he's able to play Superman. I think it's also that one and Joker and Clayface, where I'm just like, each one is so unique. Sometimes you can kind of hear that graveliness in his voice, but it's so impressive that he can go from these characters with such ease. And then, he was also in Doom Patrol as Mr. Nobody, and he knocked it out of the park in that. And one of my favorite little things in Doom Patrol was it's very weird and meta and strange. And one of my favorite gags is that he doesn't return in the second season. And they're kind of, and this is when Doom Patrol and Harley Quinn were all in the DC Universe app. So it might not make sense anymore if you've watched it now. But essentially they go, "Hey, where's Mr. Nobody? Like, why the fuck isn't he here?" kind of thing. And they make this subtle joke of like, "Oh, well, maybe he had better things to do." And at the bottom of the screen, they show this little advert for the Harley Quinn show. As soon as that happens. And at first you go, "What the fuck? Did they do that on purpose? Like, is that like an ad?" But in reality, it was like the perfect like meta joke because he went over. But sorry, I had to jerk him off in the DC stuff real fast. But yeah.
Oh no, I think, but I love that like in the sense that the industry really does like, and they know him, like he's become notable as being such a versatile voice specifically, but character actor as well. And I'm really happy for Alan Tudyk.
Anytime Disney's like, "We need a weirdo, who can we get? Get him on the phone."
Doesn't he play?
He plays a chicken.
He plays a chicken, and he's like, "I went to Juilliard." And then he's like basically what John Ratzenberger is for Pixar movies. He's in like the main, he's in like every Disney animated movie going back the last, I don't know how many years. Like, he's in Frozen. He's like the Duke of Wesselton or whatever, the Wesselton. So yeah, he you can
and
always.
And he's also Duke Weaselton in Zootopia as a pun.
Yeah,
of
so
that,
he
that
just
performance.
Exactly. Yeah. So he just shows up in all these great like little cameos / supporting, just really bizarre great character roles.
But just kind of before Lee, speaking about Dale's actor, but the part that just it's just Alan Tudyk's brilliance. That's the part, one of the most funniest parts to me was the scene where he's giving Dale the nail gun and the nail gun goes off and he just is like, "Whoa." It just hit me so hard and it was so funny. But yeah, going to Dale's actor, like, I've known him since Reaper, but more recently, like, he's a really good dramatic actor and has had like a 10 years since the beginning, and it's going to be actually ending this season, I think, or next season of New Amsterdam. He plays a really awesome character in that one as well. And
Tyler Labine is who we're talking about.
Tyler Labine. Yeah, he's awesome too, and awesome in this role. Just off the bat, you like love him to death. He's such a fun character, and Yeah, and all the just going on to the teenagers themselves, and like, of course, the Chad is a literal Chad, you know, kind of thing. He is the Chad. He has, you know, the popped collar, polo shirt. He's wearing a white belt that the belt loop buckle is pushed to the side. It's not centered. It's just, he's the embodiment of the Chad. And him going crazy, and it's such an incredible twist, you know, like it is a classic horror twist of like the reveal of his parentage and stuff, but which is kind of sad in its way, and it's very tragic. And I love how like Dale feels sorry for him for a second, but he's like, but this man's crazy, kind of thing, and like, oh, this explains it as well, that he's crazy. And yeah, that was like a pretty awesome, because like he turns, it's literally a transformation of him being like the teenage, you know, hero, like who's the one from Friday the 13th, Tommy?
Is that Kevin Bacon?
No,
he dies. Bacon dies. The original.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, that's and all. The first Friday, oh, you're talking about the later. Dies. Oh, the later
one. It's
with Corey Feldman.
There it's not go, Corey yeah. Feldman, though. But, yeah.
He's in a couple. They can't change
actors. No, but he's in
a
Tommy.
They change actors. Yeah, they change actors. I think the first Tommy is like when he's a kid, he fucking shaves his head. And then later on, it's like another guy. And then I think it's another guy after. I don't remember.
Yeah.
He goes from that kind of character to just slowly descending into madness. And then to have that reveal of like, which is kind of like a classic killer origin story of like, oh, like my father was a serial killer and it's in my genes and stuff like that, and go crazy. Just a really awesome concept. And I that's what you get for these like indie movies. You could definitely see it wasn't high budget, but it made it even more darling for that. It felt very much like, especially like the opening scene, and such recently watching Evil Dead for the first time, that opening scene felt very much like Evil Dead in quality and of it as well. And yeah, it's such an enjoyable movie. I loved it from like beginning to end, and I was very, very happy that the misidentification of Tucker and Dale did not last. I was very much expecting it to turn out like, oh yeah, they're gonna like get arrested because nobody will believe them. And then, yeah, like how Allison's friend was like, oh, she has Stockholm syndrome. So it was very nice. It was very nice to have them actually be believed, and to actually the news people, which like that was pretty fun, like at the beginning with a very scary movie trope of like the bad guy is still alive kind of thing. But yeah, I was very happy that they didn't get arrested, and then they got their happy endings. Well, Tucker kind of like lost his vacation home and his car, yeah. but in other ways, like I did love that, like, Dale kind of gained the confidence, and yeah, it was a very, very fun movie. Loved it.
Yeah, yeah, I did, and, you know, I touching on what you were saying, Ariel, I really like the arc that Dale goes on through the movie, where at the beginning, he is just kind of this very timid guy, and he's not confident in his looks, and, you know, he's afraid to talk to women, but he's such a good guy, even in the beginning, you know, when they see that scene of Allison, she's getting ready to skinny dip, and he just like, he immediately closes his eyes, you know, he's such a like a wholesome dude, but he won't stick up for himself. And there's even that great scene where he's just like, stick up for yourself, and he's like, all right, I'm gonna take the beer, and he's just like, well, and he just was like, not my beer right now. And seeing his arc throughout the film till the end, when he's finally ready to go out with this girl that he's clearly built up these feelings for, I thought it was just like a really tender, nice emotional journey for this character. And you know, it was good, because it was never anything about like being like, there's no toxicity in his just coming to terms with that, where you, as you have, you know, the character who is the Chad, who is very toxic He never goes down that path where he just, like, assumes, because he's, like, the quote-unquote the typical hero of the story, that he's gonna get the girl and he's gonna hook up with her at the start, like you see in so many horror movies, like, the couple hooks up and then they get killed by the murderers, and it just subverts all of that in a way that I really enjoyed.
I agree. I like that, too. You know, I mean, it kind of shows how, like, I mean, I'm not trying to be, oh, I'm a nice guy, but, like, sometimes a chat is just a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. A chat is a chat. Deserve,
yeah, they don't deserve to kind of get the girl, and I was kind of like, yeah, fuck you, that's what you get kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
anybody who's worn a pop collar, you're a chat.
And yeah, I mean, it's just a fun film, man. It's great. And want to give a big shout out to my buddy Dane, who I miss very much. Big shout out to him for introducing this movie to me, and I'm glad that we came back around to talk about it, because yeah, I remember him bugging me so much about it. So yeah, I'm really glad to see it, and I really hope more people get out there and watch it, because it's really hard to come by a good horror comedy, especially mm-hmm. like this, where it's, and it's a great happy ending too. I usually prefer the absolutely horrific and sad endings, you know, just horrible shit happen to people. But this one, yeah, the whole time you're rooting for them, and I was like, I really want them to get their happy ending, and they did. And I know one of you guys said, like, oh, he lost his vacation home, but I'm like, but he survived.
I think at the end of it, he got his fingers back.
Yeah, well, he got his fingers back.
So at least at the end, he got that and he survived. I think at the end of the day, when you go through something traumatic like that, you're like, I'm glad I'm alive. So yeah.
I do love, like, we've talked about a lot of films that fall into this category of really meta horror films that are subverting the genre, and I definitely have a fondness for them. You know, we talked about the Evil Dead remake, obviously we talked about The Cabin in the Woods, one of my all-time favorite movies, and then with Matt and Mark, we talked about, I'm spacing on the name, it's...
Bubba Hotep?
No, the one we did with him before that, it was about the fight where it makes the final girl like an actual action badass.
The Home Invasion one? You're Next?
You're next. Thank you. Oh, thank you. But,
wish I was on that one, because I absolutely love that film. That movie's really fucking good,
was,
too.
But yeah, and then, yeah, like you said, I also got to shout out my brother Mitchell for making me watch this movie. And strangely, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when I went on, like, Just Watch, this movie is, like, streaming everywhere mm-hmm. at least that has ads. So there's something weird going on with the rights to it or something, where, because I, like, was like, okay, where should I watch this? I'm like, oh, it's on Peacock and Amazon and Tubi and, like, Hoopla and, like, just anywhere. It's like, so hopefully with all of those options, with all these free options to watch it, people will start discovering this movie, because, like we said, you know, There are so many ways now for people to watch movies with stuff like Tubi and stuff introducing these kind of, like, weirder horror things. But, yeah, it's just on all of these apps. So I don't know what mm-hmm. happened with the rights there, but I'm glad it's potentially going to be in a lot of front of a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah. I really do hope that more movies follow that kind of thing. Like, just stream on different platforms at the same time. Share it among the people, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, most definitely.
And I wanted to ask, so since we're kind of talking about films that kind of subvert the genre, what are some films that you guys personally really love, like, that are closer, even if they're popular or underrated, whichever, which one, like, hits you where, like, you like that it turns the genre on its head kind of thing? It doesn't necessarily have to be horror. It could be anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in recent years, kind of going back to that You're Next, and I had mentioned it in that episode, I'm pretty sure, but in recent years, like, Ready or Not, it's been a really mm-hmm. awesome one, in my opinion. I really love that one. Kind of, yeah, subverting the final girl kind of genre, in a way. Kind of holiday one, I guess, in a way, is like Violent Night. That one just popped into my head with, like, very much warrior Saxon historic Santa Claus just going die hard on everybody was a really fun, like, kind of subversion of genre. Also, like, I just watched it yesterday. Renfield is a little subversion of genre too, like, just with that. The whole touching on classic movies, they even have, like, a sequence that's very, that's like in the style of reenacts scenes from the Universal Dracula, the black and white one, but it's kind of like turns it on its head as well with this like concept of Renfield actually being in a toxic relationship and taking it on that kind of road. I enjoyed that twist. But yeah, those are like some recent ones that have popped into my head.
So one that I feel like this movie has been probably reclaimed a lot recently. When it first came out, I know a lot of people were just like, what is this? And I had no interest in it. I think that's probably because it was mismarketed. But I think that a film that does a really good job, and it's once again in the horror genre, of kind of taking the typical villain or typical victim and making them into the villain is Jennifer's Body. I think that is such a clever screenplay by Diablo Cody. It's like, that is exactly how you should utilize Megan Fox. She's so good at the dynamic between her and Amanda Seyfried is so good. If anybody listening has not seen Jennifer's Body, it is an absolute blast, especially if you're a horror fan. Check it out. It's, I think, honestly, I would have said maybe 5 years ago it's underrated, but it's kind of become this darling where it's one. I think it has the record for the biggest increase in Letterboxd rating over the past 10 years because people are kind of re-examining it through new updated eyes and being like, did we miss the boat on this one? So, I really love Jennifer's Body.
You know what? I actually wanted to see that. Oh, now, recently, I wanted to watch it because when it came out, you're right, it was marketed as this very, like,
sexy vampire.
And it's hot. Yeah. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. You know, girls making out together. And I was like, I mean, I guess. And I know, like, I heard Diablo Cody wrote it, and I was like, well, you know, Juno and all that. Mm-hmm. I was like, but it's just the way it was marketed. It was so like, ugh. Or I was like, maybe I'll wait for it. Maybe whatever. And then, yeah, like you said, it got this reevaluation where I was like, damn, all right, maybe now I kind of want to give it a watch. But yeah.
Well, to Ariel, yeah. I think one thing I'll say to Ariel to pique her interest in it is that Adam Brody is in it, and he is incredible as this like almost like evil Brandon Flowers character. I freaking love, like, he's just like this early 2000s like glam rocker with like the mascara and stuff like that, and he is so good. He's somebody who I'm a huge fan of. I know you're a big fan of too, Ariel, and he needs to be in more stuff, and he's great in it in the supporting role.
Yeah, like I've seen like a bit of it. Hasn't grabbed me yet, though.
Well, watch the whole thing. Watch the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. Because I it was a scene with Megan Fox, and she's tolerable, but
she's so good. Like this is the role she was like made for. Like she's like whatever in the Transformers and like New Girl, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like this is exactly. Like, this is tailor-made what she should be playing. And, yeah, once you have the context of the whole film, it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'll check it out. It hasn't, like, it hasn't hit my radar. Or it's going to take a lot.
I had the same feeling. And I eventually went back and watched it, and I was like, you know what? Same. I missed the boat on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Alan, what were you saying? What about you?
Oh, man. See, like, I don't, maybe it did. We've covered it before, shameless plug. They came together. I fucking hate romantic comedies.
I hate that passion. One.
I know you hate it, but we like it. Let us like things, Ariel. Yeah.
I'm not even, I didn't even bash you on liking Jennifer's Body. I'm just saying.
3 seconds ago.
I said I didn't. I'm giving perspective on my own.
All right, well, let Alan talk about why he likes the movie.
No, I mean, I hate romantic comedies. I really don't like them. They fucking piss me off. And it just really gives, like... But anyway, I won't go into that. But what I loved about it was that it was just so... it was perfectly done for me. Like, I loved the fucking comedy. I just loved how bonkers and wacky it was, and it really just turned everything up inside its head. Like, it just kept giving for me. Like, it just kept giving, where, like, romantic comedies, I feel like, just depress me, and I'm just like, oh, God, like...
Aww.
They make me so sad for some reason. Like, they piss me off.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, I was just like, oh, God, this is a fucking blast. And yeah, like it just turned everything around, and like, yeah, it I think for me it was I guess it's kind of how like people, well, this movie, if anything, it's, I feel Tucker, Dale vs. Evil is a great movie to show non-horror fans, mm-hmm. because, yeah. you know, they're going to go in with expectations like, oh, the hillbillies are the bad guys, blah, blah, blah. And then, no, you find out they're not, and it's hilarious, and it does a great job. So I feel like Tucker and Dale vs. Evil is like, They Came Together mm-hmm. is a romantic comedy version of that kind of subversion
for Tucker and
Dale vs. Evil. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love that. So for me, because I won't lie, I was so fucking nervous going into that movie. I was like, oh my God, it's romantic comedy. I fucking, but it has Paul Rudd. And then my girlfriend was like, well, it has Amy Poehler. I was like, ah, fuck it, okay. And then we started watching it, and like first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, this is that type of movie? And I fucking fell up. But anyways, go back and listen to the episode. Yeah, I'll jerk it off more on that one. But yeah, definitely that one. That was one of the ones where I was like, yeah.
Well, I have one more. I don't know if this would qualify or not, because it feels like it might be a kind of subversion of just like a dumb, it's not even stoner, because you don't see them as stoners, but they act like stoners, of just like those kind of 80s movies with like two idiots in it. But then like, actually, it's like a time travel adventure, and that's Bill and Ted. I freaking love Bill and Ted, like all three of them, but especially that first one is such a classic.
Mm-hmm. So Crates.
Crates. Oh my God. Is that where that's from?
Yeah.
So Crates.
I've actually never seen the Bill and Ted movies nor Jennifer's Body.
Dude, you got, okay. And Bill and Ted first. That's like an iconic movie.
Yeah, that's one of them. I was like, I've seen parts of it, but I didn't know what was going on, because I guess it's a lot more than I thought. So yeah, I gotta give it a shot.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Mm-hmm. Be awesome to each other.
Another one, I don't think it was very like submersive, but I it changed the genre, but I feel like it was more like a let's push shit, and I think it just, again, it's a little horror movie that could, a little mega slasher that could, was Terrifier 2, where I just, it just blew my mind how such a small budget went balls to the wall extreme and just did very well. Because I won't lie, the first one, I liked it, but I thought it was very like torture porny. And then Terrifier 2, I felt like they understood this time around that they had to do a blend of like black comedy, like they needed that missing ingredient, and they threw it in there and it just worked. And yeah, I feel like it's success for what it is. Yeah, because I kind of went in just going like, oh, cool, you know, I'll give it a watch, slash movie. But yeah, I feel like it's subverted more than just the genre, but just more like itself. Like it became bigger than what it was.
Yeah.
Like it, yeah.
Well, unless you were going to say something here, I just wanted to comment on like I think the common thread between all of these movies. And I think that like they all, it's a really fine line between walking of like paying reverence to something while kind of deconstructing and making fun of it, but also not being like, yeah, but this thing you love is really dumb. Like all of these movies that we've talked about, while they are kind of like subverting these things and in a sense a little bit making fun of them, but they still, you can tell there still is the love for all of these movies. All of these horror films that we've talked about, they clearly are made by people who have this reverence for horror films. And another example I'll give is, look at Enchanted. That is a movie that is absolutely just taking apart all of the Disney mythos and deconstructing it. But it also just loves that classic Disney formula while it's totally building up. And like that movie, like in retrospect, that was a hard thing to pull off. So much so that like, watch the second one, which does not do a good, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's, doesn't really pull that off. But that, and so that first Enchanted was so freaking good, and all these movies that we talk about are so good because they managed to absolutely strike that balance of like, we are making fun of this thing and pointing out all the tropes to it, but still being like, but we love it, we appreciate it, and we know that you watching it also love and appreciate it, and we're gonna do this out of the kind of admiration we have for this style of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. I think with Disenchanted, it plays more into the... While Enchanted played more into classic Disney princesses, and Disenchanted, and for that reason, appealed more to younger fans than like the classic fans of Disney, because it plays more into the tropes of the current or recent Disney princesses, such as like Moana, Mulan, even these kind of Rapunzel, these kind of like princesses that are a little bit independent and like are trying to find themselves, have disagreements with like their parent figure, because you kind of get that sense with the daughter kind of character. But yeah, like I think for that reason, kind of was not as well received and wasn't understood, but kind of I've enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate what they were trying to do. It just didn't, for me personally, didn't pull it off as well as that original Enchanted, which was, you know, such a masterpiece.
Mm. Yeah, and I wanted to touch a little bit on what you were saying, Derek, about there being a fine line when you're trying to parody or satirize the genre, or just in general, because sometimes I think maybe some studios think it's easy, or they think there's like a shortcut to do it, because don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. I love the first two, especially the first one. I love the first one because it directly, mostly parodies Scream and Scary Movie, which, trivia, Scary Movie was supposed to be the original title for Scream.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, those movies, the first one, I'm going to focus on the first one. It tries to do what Scream did, and it tries to be funny and everything. It's like 90% comedy, and it does a fine job of being a funny movie, but it gets it wrong in that aspect. And then after Scary Movie 2, it becomes absolute dog shit. Yeah. Like, they're just fucking horrible films, but... That's the example.
They're pulling very much so in that way too. Like, they're pulling from not the greatest like scary movies again. Also, like, I think like after two, like you have the they like have to like pull from like M. Night Shyamalan work. I think they have like a spoof of The Happening in one, which is like
so immediately dated. Like, look at the posters for like any of like 3 through 5, and you're just like, oh yeah, those were movies that came out in like 2008 that we forgot about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man, I mean, even Scary Movie 1 through them, they all are fucking dated.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The first one, oh god, if you were to show the first one to anybody, they're gonna be like, okay, I get they're making fun of Scream, but everything else, you know, they have the what's up joke, which at the time 2
has the Matrix. Sense. Joke.
Yeah, 2 has a Matrix, and then they have the 2 has like the Nike basketball fucking commercial joke.
Yep.
And the first one, what else did it do? It made fun of like more 90s movies too, like Usual Suspects and stuff.
I think the first one, which is like a classic meme but I don't know how relevant it is, but I know that the first one referenced like, had your kids, had your wife, you know.
Oh, that, no, that was before it.
But in one. Oh, really? Yeah,
the first one?
Oh, yeah, that was before. I guess that. His character. Are you? I don't know. Because Marlon Wayne's character is very much like that kind of that guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. But like that Hide Your Kids thing was like, that was like the meme, like the early memes. Mm-hmm. Like, Scary Movie 1 was like, I think 2000, and it was like, referencing like 90s like commercials and films.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, maybe it was referencing a later Scary Movie, but anyways, there's that fine line that some films try to do. Like I said, I love that movie, you know, Scary Movie 1's funny as fuck, but it fails on trying to do what Tucker and Dale versus Evil did.
Mm-hmm.
It in the sense where, I mean, even now, like if I were to tell somebody, oh, go check out Scary Movie 1, there's a lot of things that they're not going to understand. It's very dated, and it's not going to hit that same feel as this film will, because this film is ultimately kind of timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It kind of has all the ingredients of a typical, like, you know, Hills Have Eyes, fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Evil Dead, Cabin in the Woods, kind of thing. Just the classic Cabin in the Woods story.
Exactly. So like, Scary Movie is like, it's making fun of Scream, which came out in 96, and it's making fun of beer commercials and maybe The Matrix, I don't know. But it's very, like, of its time where sometimes it just... It'll work when it comes out, but it's not going to work forever, unfortunately.
Yeah. There is only one moment in this that, like, puts it in a specific time, but I did actually think it was really funny because they talk... Because this, you know, movie came out in 2010, so they talk about 20 years earlier, which would be, like, 1990, and then it just, like, hard cuts to them playing Pump Up the Jam in that flashback, and I just started, like, cracking up because it's like this serious story, and then it just, like, starts playing the song from Space Jam, and you're just like, oh my, I can't. Like, that moment had me.
I think stuff like that's okay. I think that's, like, it works, yeah.
Because it was wasn't a reference to something that was popular when this movie came out, it was a reference to something that had been popular 20 years before this, and so that's why it worked.
And the thing is, this will still work because we live in an age of nostalgia where everything from back then is being
'90s still feels like it was like 10 years ago.
10 years ago,
or 20.
Yeah, the '90s, 10 years ago.
Well, that's the whole point. Like, that's why. Exactly, like, it's very much like a recent phenomenon.
But yeah, no, like the whole thing with the nostalgia is like. I've been hearing, you know, I don't really listen to the radio as often as I used to, but, you know, times when I'm driving in the car, there's like all these songs that are like using samples of like very popular songs from like the 2000s and the 90s, where like it's kind of getting reused to the point where like now people that are way younger than us will hear that. And then if they watch this movie, like I'm pretty sure Pump Up the Jams is in some film. Or in some song recently right now. I think even my girlfriend played a song the other day where it was like an EDM remix of it. And it's still going to connect with people. It's still going to connect in a certain way where people are going to be like, oh, I remember that. And even younger viewers are going to laugh at that and be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty funny. Like everyone's going to have a certain stage in their lives when they've heard it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily date it. You know?
Yeah.
But with that, thank you guys as always for having a discussion with me about movies. Yeah. And for anyone out there who like to hear more of us, Derek, guests on some podcasts, any recent ones to date?
Yeah, I do want to mention that I was recently on a show called Guess What You're Wrong, where we talked about some horror films. We talked about, and I don't even feel bad about saying this, an absolutely terrible horror film called Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Which is really bad. And then
I love that dog shit. I'm not gonna lie. It's really bad. Everyone kept asking me at work. They're like, "You like horror? Are you gonna watch it?" I was like, "That really looks like shit."
It was done vainfully. It was made vainfully for sure.
I go into that a bit on that podcast. So that was fun. I'm also guest on a couple episodes of Kamen Rider with me. Just did an episode of the old Super Mario Bros. Movie. And then I'm always on my friend Damien's podcast. Can I say something?
Can I answer you real fast? Just so the listeners get a little bit a little bit more detail on it. Kamen Ride with me. So do you guys talk about Kamen Rider all the time?
So that podcast, I've basically only been on bonus episodes, but he is watching the Super Sentai show. He'll be watching like two different shows, and him and his co-host kind of go and review episode by episode. I've been on like one episode. I came in blind and just talked about an episode of Jetman, which was the series before they started adapting the Power Rangers. That was a blast because I had no idea what was going on. But I've mostly just done bonus episodes that he's done on Toku stuff that is more American or different than the Kamen Rider or Super Sentai stuff that he reviews. It's a great show. Everybody should check it out for sure.
I just asked because I thought you were like secretly a Kamen Rider fan, and I was gonna be like, where the fuck did this come from? But yeah, continue my bad.
No problem. And if you would like to hear a lot more of us here at the Undercast Company, you could check out our own podcast of more of this, and as well as my podcast that I release monthly of You've Never Seen. I've recently started a series with my brother. We're following up our previous series of me introducing him to my utmost favorite movies of all time with favorite movies from my childhood, because we have a 10-year difference, and it's gonna hopefully be pretty fun based on the first episode of me discussing the Pagemaster with him, just kind of like introducing like how, you know, my childhood was and the movies I enjoyed as a kid, since I kind of lived through his own childhood. So go and check that out as well. And with that, I would like to thank all of you, as always, for listening to us babble and talk about movies. And everybody out there, thanks for being amazing.
All right, see you guys next time.
Take it easy, everybody.